Welcome to Career Tools. This week, the high C in DISC and teamwork weaknesses, part one. The questions this cast answers are, as a high C, how might I be hurting my relationship with my team? As a high C, what behaviors should I stop doing to improve my relationship with my teammates? And as a high C, what behaviors should I start doing to improve my relationships with my teammates? This is one of a series of casts about DISC, and we're going to put this short explanation in each time before the casts because not everybody knows what DISC is. So if you don't know or you want to find out more about it from Manager Tools, you can listen to this. And if you've already heard it, you can just skip to the cast.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And folks, DISC is a self-assessment that measures how you naturally behave when interacting with other individuals, at least, when you're not thinking about it. William Marsden identified four behavioral styles back in 1928. They were dominance, influence, steadiness, and conscientiousness, a la DISC. And since then, many companies have developed DISC assessments, including us here at Manager Tools. But MT-DISC itself differs from many of the other assessments. It's more than an assessment. It's an eye-opening, game-changing, career-accelerating revelation.
And I think we say that because all of us here have found it to be that when we found it the first time.
Oh, yeah.
It certainly was for me. So we have free podcasts which describe each of the styles, D, I, S, and C. And we have podcasts that describe how each of the styles act in particular situations, like the one that's about to follow. And we will link to them from all of the podcasts in this series. But first, you have to know what your profile is. So?
The MT-DISC assessment starts with a 20-minute online questionnaire. It's very affordable. All you're going to do is answer 28 questions about your preferences, and you'll be delivered a customized 40-page-ish, they're all different lengths, I think, report unpacking your strengths, weaknesses, and tendencies in clear and actionable behavioral language. No theories, no psychobabble. The MT-DISC report will give you tailored insights to help you in terms of your communication behaviors.
And what I really like about DISC and our reports in particular is they're a language you understand because there's no psychobabble, and they're super simple to remember and communicate with other people about. So if there's a bunch of you that learn it, you're all talking the same language very quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The power of MT-DISC lies in what follows, because unlike other DISC tools, your report compares your styles to the other profiles with specific guidance on adapting your communication behaviors so that you can collaborate more effectively. And when you apply them, that's when you see how MT-DISC transforms your relationships.
Mm-hmm. Because, folks, the thing about it is, it doesn't actually matter what your natural tendencies are, because your natural tendencies are ones you can change anytime you want to change them, which will, in turn, be the theme of this series of podcasts and everything else, basically, that you hear from Manager Tools. With MT-DISC, you'll learn how to adapt your natural communication style to achieve effective outcomes in every interaction.
And people are everywhere, so you can practice all the time.
All the time. Constant.
If you'd like to find out what your DISC profile is, you can just go to the website and purchase it for yourself or an entire team. You can buy in bulk through the website and have the option to distribute to your whole department or a company. And like I said, when everybody, a whole organization, understands the MT-DISC language, it's amazing how much it impacts communication and collaboration.
Mm-hmm. And there are a wealth of other resources on our website as well that will help you continue this path of better workplace relationships. So there's the Effective Relationship podcast series, which is a deep dive on tactics for working with bosses and direct reports of all DISC styles, from driving dominant individuals to supportive steadiness individuals. Through real workplace scenarios, you're going to learn what to say and what to do to be more successful.
And then we have a training called the Effective Communicator, and we have a bunch of ways in which we deliver it to fit your budget and your availability. So we have a video product as an on-demand and low-cost option. And then, Sarah, you delivered all of the others.
Yeah, exactly. We have live, virtual, delivered over Zoom. It's a one session. Oh, it's quite a long session. I think it's like 4.5 hours, somewhere in around there. And I mean, we deliver it internationally, in person as well. It's a whole day event.
But people can sign up just a sort of open enrollment. Anyone can come to our public sessions, but you also will go to companies for groups, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you have got a group of individuals in your organization that could all use better communications as a group together, because why not? We all could. We also do come on site as well to work with organizations, groups of people, to help them as an organization, department, company, communicate better together.
MT Disc delivers insights that empower you to transform communication and collaboration. And those personalized assessments and actionable reports are just the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So set yourself up in your workplace up, I should say, for success by purchasing an MT Disc profile as well as any of the coaching and training on our website today. Invest in yourself, break down barriers, and propel your career forward. MT Disc is really a revelation for many people, and the secret to a positive communication and teamwork environment within your organization.
Sarah, this is the fourth, because we always go in order, D-I-S-C, of our series of DISC casts for each of the profiles and teamwork weaknesses. And each of the profiles have their own strengths and weaknesses. And depending on the situation and where you are and the people in the room, the natural behaviors of one or other of the profiles might be less or more or less effective at achieving the objective of whatever you want to achieve in a room. But that doesn't mean that only a high D can achieve that objective if it's a high D behavior that's needed. Anyone can behave any way they want to if they think about it first. You can be quiet and talk slowly.
Yeah,
if
I'm
you
capable.
Think about it first.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
just, you just have to think about it. And so in this guidance, we're going to talk about the high C's natural behaviors, which are working against them when they're working in a team, and how to mitigate them.
All right. So our outline for today's cast: first, master your weaknesses, then praise ideas first, do what has to be done, communicate appropriately, look at the big picture, and show flexibility. That is our guidance for y'all high C's. Now, let's begin with the first bit, the master your weaknesses bit. We've mentioned this in previous casts, but the high C's are no different. No, it's not enough to know the weaknesses of the high C in any situation. You need to know them, know your particular flavor of said weakness, and then be able to mitigate them in the moment if you're going to be your most effective in any given situation you're in.
And DISC, MT DISC, is not a personality test. You can't fail a DISC assessment.
Right, yeah, it's an assessment, yeah.
It's not pass-fail. It's a study of behavior, and we can see and hear behavior in three ways: verbally, vocally, and visually. And if we look at all of the people, we can see that they fall into four groups as far as those characteristics are concerned. There's people that are task-focused and assertive, people who are people-focused and assertive, people who are people-focused and reserved, and those people who are task-focused and reserved, you high C's. And each of those groups shows a different set of verbal and vocal and visual signs.
Exactly. So as a high C, high C's are task-focused, meaning that in any given conversation, they focus on getting the task done rather than on how people feel about the task itself. They're reserved, meaning they believe and act as if they don't have the power to change their environment. So a high C in a room full of people doesn't believe their will outweighs that of all of the other people in the room with them. High C is a person who will remain seated until the aircraft has come to a stop and the seatbelt lights have been turned off because they truly believe that one person following the instructions is good for everyone. Whereas the high Ds or Is will do generally what they please because their needs, their personal needs, feel as though they outweigh those of everyone else's. Generally, high Cs want to, in their conversations, in their considerations, think more about data and then make rules so that optimum results are achieved every time, believing that to be the logical and rational way to proceed in an attempt to solve any problem.
One of my friends is a high C, and we were at the airport, and there were those stanchion things, you know, those pretend barriers that they put out that are just really a strip of fabric. And there were people ignoring them. And she said, I don't understand. There's rules.
There's rules.
Yes. But not everybody believes that those pieces of fabric are actually physical barriers. She did.
Exactly.
We see high C's reserved nature in their behavior. High C's don't chat. In fact, they're the profile most likely to be described as taciturn, people who use the least number of words possible to describe any situation or answer any question. They're the people who say, would you like a sandwich? And they say yes. And they don't say what they want or any sort of information. It's just yes. Because the answer to, do I want a sandwich, is yes.
Elaboration unrequired.
Yes. They listen rather than talk. And when they do talk, it's likely to be initially a lot of questions so that they can understand the situation very precisely. And if they can write an email or an instant message rather than talk on the phone or in a meeting, they'd much rather do that because it allows them time to reword what they're writing until it's perfect. If you have someone in your life who, when you watch the phone, it goes dot, 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 and then the dots go away because they've deleted what they've written. And then it goes dot, dot, dot because they've started writing and then it gets deleted and it goes on. That's a high C because they keep rewriting the message because they want it to be perfect.
Yes, exactly. Precise, accurate.
Yeah. And they talk about data, facts, processes, roles, logic, rationale, all before they'll talk about people or names. And they always tell you what they think rather than what they feel. Because what they feel is irrelevant. What they think is what is important.
That's exactly it. Now, vocally, high C's speak more slowly and more softly than our more assertive styles, that is the D's and I's. But they talk more minimally, like D's, and this is the tricky part, unless they're explaining something that they have a deep knowledge about, in which case, you're going to get a lot of details. The way I often think about it for C's is they won't have much to say to you, if anything at all. But when they have something to say, they say it all. So you're familiar with string theory, right? Because that's going to definitely play into this answer. And you're like, whoa. Or they're going to start back at the evolution of the planet Earth. And you're like, whoa, fast forward several billions of millennia. I just wanted this answer. But that's your C's, right? They go back and they provide all that history. I mean, we mentioned email. They invented it, right? High C's are often found in technology organizations. They're the people that created the email so that you guys would stop inviting them to all of the useless meetings you invite them to. But nonetheless, in terms of C's, for anything they deem unimportant, you'll get a minimal answer. If you ask for a presentation on the pros and cons of some technical approach that they're applying in their area of expertise, you're going to get a very well presented, very well prepared presentation that is very fact driven. They're going to offer proof for all their points, including reams of data, and will expect you to have data to back up any assertions you make, especially those to the contrary of theirs.
I feel like they invented Wikipedia as well, because their answers are either yes or the whole of Wikipedia.
Or the whole of Wikipedia.
One or the other. Visually, high C's tend to look away when they're thinking or talking, and they don't smile much. They have what people call a flat effect, which means their facial expressions don't change much. They're very placid. And they make small gestures. In fact, if you lined them up next to one of each of the styles, they would be the body and face that moved the least. which is not to say that they are the least interesting or they have the least contribution to make. It's just that they have the least going on the outside. Actually, their brains are probably going as fast as the high eyes.
Oh, yes. Inside.
It's just that they don't have the high eyes arm movements, and high eyes are fidgety on the outside. High seas are calm on the outside, but the brain is going on the inside. High seas are focused on their task and they keep their distance. And people, combined with that low animation, it often means their talents are hidden because people kind of overlook them.
Yeah.
Because they're not making a lot of noise about what they could be doing.
Yeah, exactly. They're not thought of as creative. And they are definitely of the most creative people we know, because they'll fall down a well and learn everything and come up with a wonderful new revolutionary process. And because they love process, people don't think of them as coming up with new ideas. Because again, going back to the part about data and facts, if you don't have a good reason to support the need for a new process, let's just follow the old process. Mm-hmm. Why would we change the process? It works, by my estimation.
They're very good at cutting through things as well. Why are we doing this? What's the point of doing this? And everybody else is like, spent an hour talking about it. And they're like, why are we doing this? And everyone's like, well, we could leave it alone and nothing would happen. Yeah.
And then we do. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Exactly. All right. So high C's behaviors make perfect sense to the high C. But some of those behaviors that they exhibit, that they engage in naturally, are in fact detrimental to working well in a team environment. So, for example, high C's, you have a tendency to hear an idea that someone else puts forward and either be silent while you think about every iteration and consequence, or begin asking questions to the individual who's posed that idea. And you ask questions that are in relation to every possible problem and edge case you could possibly come up with or think of. That is, high C's, you think that when you ask a bunch of questions, well, have you thought about this? Have you thought about this? What about this? Did you consider this, though? You think that you're showing that you value the idea by giving it due care and attention. I want to learn more about it. I truly want to understand it. However, the other styles often think you're knocking down their idea and not valuing their contribution. And your what you mean to be thorough analysis actually comes across as criticism. Right? Oh, of course you think it won't work. Of course you think it won't work. Why would it work? It's just my idea again. Yeah, that can totally happen.
And in the long term, people stop making suggestions when you're in the room. They stop collaborating with you and they start presenting you with ideas or giving you things to work on and tell you it's a done deal. Like, I don't want to hear your contribution because I don't want to argue with you. Because that's what it feels like when you are asking a bunch of questions. It feels like you're criticizing the idea or you're pushing back against the idea when all you're trying to do is understand it. In fact, this is the behavior that prompted our very first ever manager tools cast, which is solution to a stalled technical career.
Yeah, exactly. And it happens. It happens quite often, in fact. And the fact that this behavior, one that you thought was valuable and a huge asset to the team, is actually seen negatively by other people, probably comes as a shock to you. And that doesn't mean that it's not happening between you and your team. Just because you didn't think this was happening doesn't make it untrue. Now, the good news, though, is that you can mitigate it. And in our guidance, we're going to cover this and the behaviors that may be damaging your relationship with your team. The things that you think of are useful and a gift or meant to help often come across as criticizing or not completing tasks before all the information is available and slowing things down, or not communicating appropriately or enough, being too far down in the weeds, and not being flexible enough.
Okay, so let's start with that always questioning ideas behavior that you have. Mm-hmm. So when you hear a new idea a proposal, a recommendation, a suggestion, a concept, a plan, a strategy, anything, we're going to praise it first. Immediately say, that's an interesting idea, or I hadn't thought of it that way, or that's a great starting point, or I can see some potential there, or that's a creative solution.
That could make a difference, is another one. Or, thank you for your contribution. I can see how that could be helpful. We should think about that more. Or, that really works with our goals. Those are some options.
Even making positive noise, like, or,
like, interesting.
Yeah, just, Like, the silence. Mike tells a story when somebody presented an idea, just pushed back from the conference table and sat in silence with their eyes closed. And what she was doing was thinking about the idea and thinking through the consequences. And what everybody else thought was she hated every idea they presented. And
standoffish, shutting down.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And not what she meant.
No, at all. And if all you can say is, let me think about that for a second, before you close your eyes and push back from the conference table, then that's a good start to let people know that you actually appreciate the idea.
Mm-hmm. And we know that you do. All we're suggesting is you let the person to whom you're speaking in that moment know you do. And folks, we know that you may have concerns about this approach. We promise. We will get to your concerns and help alleviate those concerns. But first, some caveats. You have to say these things like you mean it. It can't come across as sarcastic, as if you're saying it just to really get what you want, ultimately, right? And you can't say it as if you've actually drifted off in your own thoughts and you're actually talking to yourself. Also, you have to be aware enough to mix it up. And not say the exact same set of four or five set words every single time. You got to mix it up. If you use the same phrase every time, people are going to catch on and start to think it's just a bridge for you to say what you want to say. And it's actually not, oh, that's a good idea. What about? And if you use that one every time, it's going to sound like, oh, here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah says really good idea and then just talks about whatever she thinks is best.
Yeah, this is the rote answer. And we know that you are concerned with fairness and rule following. And when we say, that's an interesting idea, and you're now thinking, but what if it isn't an interesting idea? You don't want me to lie, surely. Or what if I have to say, I can see some potential there, and there's no potential?
Right? It's a terrible idea.
Yeah, we're not encouraging you to be unethical or to lie. We're encouraging you to say something positive before you do whatever you would do normally first.
That's exactly it, folks. And the reason we suggest that is because what you normally do first, like automatically, the first thing to fall out of your mouth is to kick the tires on the idea. Try and find out all the reasons it's not going to work. Fix some of them. Fix some alternatives for others and generally work through it. And find out if the idea is a good one. And you do this in one of two ways, either out loud or silently in your own head. Either way, the other styles often see this kicking the tires approach, let's see if we can make this work, as criticism. And folks, high Ds have a similar problem in that they're quite happy to have an intellectual discussion that other styles think of as an argument. Or a disagreement. Ooh, why are you guys fighting?
Yeah.
Like, we're not fighting. This is how we talk. What do you want? Right? It's
exactly.
That. It's, yep. It's that same thing, but the high C version. In terms of other people, they have to learn that we judge ourselves by our intentions and our actions, as I had learned as a high D, and you have to learn that same lesson.
Yeah. If you think about it, there are four circumstances when somebody is just given an idea. The first one is the idea is actually worthy of thought.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are actually going to go through the process of kicking the tires of the idea, you do genuinely think it's worth the mental effort. And so you can say something positive about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, saying, oh, wow, that's a good idea. What about is totally legit. Also, another option is the idea is low value and it's a teachable moment. Now, a lot of the time, genuinely low value ideas come from team members with less experience. And explaining to them or working through with them why their idea won't work, it's a teaching or a coaching effort. And you can start with something like, that's a great idea. And I can totally see why you suggested that. Let's talk more about that idea outside this meeting. Then, outside of the meeting, after the meeting potentially, you can explain why the idea that they posed won't work in this case.
And that's a much better way to go than the whole, we've tried that before, it doesn't work, or we tried that last year, which is horrible.
Shut down in this meeting,
yeah,
right?
Horrible for somebody who's new or just joined the team. It always makes them feel awful.
And I would also say, Wendy, it sets a tone.
Mm-hmm.
I know that this is less important potentially than that person getting their feelings hurt or taking it the wrong way. But the other people in the room see it as, oh, look at that young person. They just shared an idea and you just shut them down, you know? And it's not a great look. It's not a great look.
Yeah. And it tells everybody else what happens to ideas.
That's what happens to ideas. Don't share your ideas unless you're willing to get stepped on by me.
June 11th and 12th, we're coming to Charlotte for an EMC and ECC. If you're listening here, you're probably interested in the content of our Effective Communicator Conference on June 12th in Charlotte. We cover DISC as a communication tool, and we can teach you how to watch another person for 2 or 3 minutes, figure out their DISC profile, and then tailor your communication to them. Be more convincing. Be more persuasive. Reduce conflict. Increase consensus. Come to Charlotte and learn how to be a great communicator. June 11th and 12th, EMC and ECC. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
So the next option is the idea is low value and it's in public. So let's assume you're in a team meeting, idea generation is happening, someone has made a low value suggestion and your boss has asked you to respond. And you could say, I can see the positives approaching it in that way. Jeff, perhaps you and I can talk about it afterwards and about how you see the detail working out. First, you're saying something positive about the idea. Mm-hmm. And second, there's no need to denigrate your colleague in public. And third, the idea is going to fall apart if it's truly low value. You're going to get Jeff outside the meeting and you're going to go, dude, what happens when they're not logged in? And he's going to go, I didn't think of that.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Right? You don't have to do that in the meeting and make Jeff embarrassed and just ruin the whole, you know, again, tell people what happens to ideas in your team by stepping on him. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, ideas are good. There's just circumstances where they just don't work because of whatever, like, because when people aren't logged in, it won't work. You don't have to have that conversation in public, and people will like you more for never embarrassing them in public.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And then there's always the situation where it's not happening in a public, right? It's a low value idea. So you're like, can I really say a great idea when it's not? But it does not happen in a public space. So you could absolutely say, that's an interesting idea. Thank you so much. I will totally consider that. And then you haven't made a commitment to doing anything. It's positive. The person feels like they've added to your idea and it may not be useful. So you may not do anything with it, but you haven't committed to them that you would.
Yeah. You've committed to considering it. I have considered it. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're asked later about the idea, whether it's low value or not, then you can discuss one or more of the merits and the most glaring weakness. There is no need to discuss every reason why an idea won't work, because this is when your colleagues begin to feel browbeaten. You think that you're being complete and they think you're flogging a dead horse.
Yeah.
I've been watching some legal stuff recently about why judges dismiss motions when they...
Okay.
Like, so the lawyers put forward a motion and the judge dismisses it. And you can be dismissed for... like, because you filed at the wrong time, but you can also be dismissed because your argument is bad. And sometimes the people who were explaining it say, it's better for the judge to just say, you were late, than to get into like arguing about the different points. Because if you go down arguing all the different points, you're just going to end up in an endless argument. And it's better to just say, you were late, and cut it off. And that's kind of here. Like, it's better to say, yeah, I like your idea, and it won't work if people aren't logged in, and you've cut it off.
Right? Instead of, yeah, and what about this? And what about this? And have you thought about this? And have you thought about this? Exactly. It's like piling on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly it. Okay, so next. Do what has to be done. There are times when you're not ready to make a decision or take an action because you lack the data to do that, to take action. But you're required to make the decision or take action. We'd recommend you make the decision or take the action.
Companies are not research labs. Well, some of them are, but they're not research labs.
Some of them literally are, but the others aren't.
Yeah, in the global sense of it, they're not research labs. The experiments are not predetermined. The data is not clean. The actors aren't rational. The goals are not consistent. The variables are not constant, and the environment is not controlled. There is always too much to do and not enough time to do it. There is always too many expectations and not enough resources, too many questions and not enough answers. And despite this, you're asked to make recommendations and decisions and take actions. And it's always been that way, and it will always be that way. Mm-hmm. And as my mother would say, that's life.
That's life. We live with that degree of uncertainty in the organizational space. And the organization trusts us to do that, knowing that all these variables are also in existence. If a decision's been made, then you have to assume it's in the team's, organization's, or the project's best interest. And therefore, you're responsible for supporting it. Before the decision is made, different set of circumstances, yes, your input, contribution, concerns, ideas, etc., are more than welcome. But once the decision is made, then it's the team's job to do their best to achieve the outcome given the decision that we've got. Now, we're not saying do something unethical or something illegal. We're not saying you can't use your boss's open door policy if you're truly that concerned that the mistake that's being made is so egregious you need to step forward and say something. But we're not saying you need to fall in like an automaton. We're not saying you're a robot that just, okay, well, decisions made, fall in line. And be aware of the fact that most of the things we're doing aren't like a make it or break it kind of situation most of the time.
It's a messy world, and you won't have everything you want to make sure that the decision is the right one. Sometimes other people will look at the same information with the same missing parts and make a different decision to you. And the team needs to be working together in the same direction to be successful. So even if you're not sure that the decision is the right one because you don't have enough data, if the decision is made, you need to support it and be seen to support it in order to play your role in the team.
That's exactly it. Now, let's do a little analogy. I think a little analogy that people can understand, definitely when you can close your eyes and imagine in your mind's eye. Imagine you're on a tug-of-war team. Now, tug-of-war is that game where two teams pull on the opposite ends of the rope, and the attempt here is one team pulls the other team over. This is the situation. Now, before the match begins, your team is looking at the other team and muttering amongst themselves, geez, they look big. I mean, they look big. They look like big people. Also, one person might be saying, well, that one has a Marine haircut. Can somebody get online? Has that guy been in the Marines? Seriously. And another person is even saying, the one on the end, I swear I saw him on another team last week. I think they're cheating. I don't even think that guy's on their team. Can somebody try and find photos? So now, people are Googling things. People are on their phones, desperately trying to figure out, was that person in the Marines? Was that person on a different team last week? And are they cheating? But before you can possibly find the evidence, the referee walks up and blows the whistle. So now, I ask you, what do you do? Do you continue standing on the sidelines, trying to find the evidence on your phone? Or Do you drop your phone, grab the rope, and start pulling as hard as you can, trying to win, despite your suspicions, just in case your suspicions are not right? Of course, most people are going to grab that rope, right? Drop their phone, grab the rope, and pull. Because that's what it means to be a team. You do what has to be done when it has to be done. And you make a choice. In this case, we'd recommend your choice be pull the rope. Do the thing instead of continually questioning after the decision's been made.
Yes. I like that analogy because it's a very obvious one and it very obviously kind of fits with that continuing to discuss what's missing or discuss the information after the game's already begun. Hopefully it was helpful to everyone else.
I like it.
We've given you two things to think about this week, and we will come back next week with three more of our pieces of behavior that you may be doing that's not working in the way you want it to in your team. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.